Well, good afternoon. Brian Noonan in for Rokan and Anna DeVlantes on 720 WGN. Glad you're with us. We're here until 6 o'clock. Then it is Blackhawks hockey. The Blackhawks out in New York taking on the Islanders tonight. Chris Bowden will have your pregame at 6 o'clock. We will be following, as you can imagine, the court appearance of Alderman Edward Burke.
Brian, can I give you a quick update?
Please do.
We are hearing that Alderman Burke is not waiving his rights to have a preliminary hearing, and he will be in court on January 18th, which also happens to be the day that Officer Jason Van Dyke will be sentenced.
Ah, all right. So
he it's going to be a busy day at the courthouse. And he's been released now on $10,000 bond as well.
All right, and we'll be watching. There's a chance that his attorneys will be outside the courthouse giving a press conference. If that happens, we will take that live. If not, we will continue to talk about it as the day goes on. Of course, charged in an attempted extortion case. So we'll be covering that. We'll also talk to Lester Holt after 4 o'clock. We will talk to him about all the big stories, the new legislators, the congressmen and senators sworn in today. Talk about that, the shutdown, so many other stories. Adam Hoge will join us after 4:30 because there's a big football game on Sunday. Speaking of football, Andy Mazur,
yeah,
you are earning the title of hardest working man at WGN after holding down the sports desk this morning. We're glad to have you this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
Violetta, it'll be your job to keep Andy caffeinated. Go in and poke him with a sharp stick if he starts to get drowsy.
Okay, cool.
All right, that's. I know you have a lot on your plate in Traffic Central, but I've got to count on you
it.
To take on a little extra responsibility today.
It's good. It's good to know that someone will help me keep caffeinated here, because that's a very important thing, especially after you've been up since 3:30 this morning.
People don't realize it. 3:30, you got up to come in and you did sports on the Cochrane Show. Did you nap at all today?
No nap. I went out and took a brisk walk around the city for a little bit, feeling a little more invigorated.
Right.
Came here, sat down and said, "Oh man, I guess I have to write some sportscast." So here I go.
Yeah, they don't just leave them for you.
No,
the morning guy doesn't leave them for you.
Yeah, that morning guy, you can't trust that guy.
I tell you what, that guy's falling down.
Tell you
job.
What,
I'm not impressed by the guy who did sports this morning.
Me
I'm glad
neither.
We have a better guy this afternoon.
Me too. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, because that's that just doesn't work out at all. This is exciting. Speaking of sports, we are giving you a chance to sit on the glass in WGN's glass seats at the Blackhawks game on Monday against the Calgary Flames. If you've never seen a hockey game up near the glass, it is a completely different thing than if you're sitting up where I usually sit, where the air is thin and my nose is bleeding. If you're down on the glass, you see, one, how big these guys are when they're on their skates, how fast everything moves, how little room there is for everything to happen.
And how hard the hits are.
Yes. It's, you hear things rattle when you're up top, but to see how hard these guys are getting slammed into the boards and into the glass, it's amazing. So after 5 o'clock, I'm going to give you a chance to sit in those seats. It is going to be very, very exciting. So all of that. And then I've been chastised already, Andy. Before I actually officially went on the air, I was chastised by Jeff, who is one of Roe's fantastic producers and an admitted space nerd. He didn't like my use of the term "dark side of the moon."
Well,
he said
he's not a Pink Floyd fan, huh?
Right. My terminology is wrong. It's the far side of the moon, which sounds much less exciting than dark side of the moon.
Yeah, Dark Side of the Moon, much better album.
Right.
Than the Far Side of the Moon.
The Far Side of the Moon is like a cow singing about a goose or a duck. It's not. It doesn't work out. So Jeff was all on me from the time I said that phrase to John Williams until now.
But is it dark over there?
Well, Violetta, no. According to Jeff, no. The sun shines on the moon all the time. It's like a tropical paradise up there. That's what I'm. That's what I'm gleaning from his critique of my terminology. Don't worry. Well, I'm sure when we talk to Andrew Johnson from the Adler, he'll realize that I've never been to space. So if I say dark side of the moon, I'd be like, I don't know, 99% of the population, Jeff. As a yeah, Jeff's been to space camp, so he's very, very, very upset that someone would. How dare I have the audacity to use the wrong terminology about the moon? Craziness.
But it is made of cheese.
Sure. Cher's on the moon, too. And there's an old man up there that looks down at us. Everything you know about the moon, Violetta, is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
It's made of cheese. It's always dark there on both sides.
The thing that amazes me still about it is it controls the tides.
Yes.
How about that? I learned that in school.
Did you?
I did.
Well, and you remembered it.
I did remember it.
It made a big impact. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I miss, you know, when we would send people up to the moon. I think it's pretty cool. I don't think, you know, any of us would ever withstand it. I've seen what the astronauts have to go through testing before they get shot up into space. I'd just explode right here on the ground before they even let me up. They'd put me in the suit and I'd go, nah, this is a bad idea.
I could barely do the teacups at Disney World.
Yeah, I'd be like when Homer Simpson was going to get shot into space. Jeff says I'm too tall. So are you telling me NASA discriminates against me because I'm too tall and too old and not smart enough? All of those things would be held against me? And the fact that one time I said dark side of the moon rather than far side of the moon? All of these things in a collection keeps me from going to space.
What about the other side of the moon? Is that better than dark side? Or?
Nope, he's saying okay. No.
All right.
Saying no. According to one of our texters, NPR, that's National Public Radio, you know, the communist outlet. NPR, I say that with tongue firmly in cheek. NPR has been calling it the dark side of the moon all day.
See?
And NPR, nothing if not a huge bunch of eggheads who know a lot of stuff. So they are not wrong. All right. Jeff getting adamant. Jeff is getting, how about backside of the moon?
Far side of the moon. That's it.
All right. Violetta jumping to Jeff's defense.
Taking sides.
Well, Jeff and Brian are back now. So the you know, the Rokon show triumvirate is back.
I got you
getting
back,
stronger
Ryan.
And stronger. Thank you, Andy.
You got it.
You know. Let's fill in, guys. We got to stick together.
You're right.
You know, the regulars come back. They forget. They've been gone for 2 weeks, hobnobbing, doing all kinds of social stuff. We've been here slaving away.
Exactly. Nose of the grindstone.
Right. They come back in. Suddenly it's, oh, man, we got to correct your terminology. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ryan Burrow is going to join us. He's got updates on what's been going on with Ed Burke, the 37-page complaint filed against him by the Justice Department, so it is in U.S. District Court. Very, very big news here in Chicago, so we'll talk to Ryan about that. But first, let's find out what Kim has in the news at 3:30.
And Brian, going along with that, we'll talk about Chicago Alderman Ed Burke in court today on attempted extortion charges, and he's already posted bond.
Will the Pacers cruise to a victory, or will Markkanen and the Bulls stop Indy in their tracks? It's Bulls-Pacers Friday at 7 on WGN-TV. Brian Noonan in for Rokon and Anna DeVellantes. Keeping an eye on what's happening, Alderman Ed Burke was in court. He was, the preliminary hearing has been set. Ryan Burrow comes in now from ABC News and WGN News to give us the latest. Ryan, thanks for jumping in. I know it's been a crazy afternoon.
It has, and Kim Gordon's been keeping everything up to date in the newscast, and we just wanted to get a few new points in there. First of all, Alderman Burke did make that first appearance. It was short. We knew it would be very, sure. very short. He did not have to put in a plea. And the judge asked whether or not he would like a preliminary hearing. He did not waive that. So it looks like we're going full steam ahead. It's set, believe it or not, for January 18th. So a couple weeks from now, that is the exact same day as the sentencing
yes.
of Jason Van Dyke. Now, another kind of twist in all of this is the fact that apparently the fast food restaurant in question is the Burger King restaurant where the whole Laquan McDonald thing ended in the first place.
Or, really?
Was a major factor in Laquan McDonald going through that parking lot during the chase that eventually led to him being fatally shot. So we don't know if there's any kind of relation or if it's just kind of weird, you know, but you've got two very large Chicago stories kind of coming to a head there.
For anybody who's just tuning in and hasn't been listening to the news up to this point, give us a quick recap of what happened. We remember the alderman's office was raided. Few weeks ago.
Yep.
Now, where are we at today?
So where we are today is federal charges of extortion against the alderman. This is regarding 2017 work that was being done, renovation on the fast food chain. They had applied, apparently gotten all the permits they needed to, but needed to meet with the alderman for one reason or another. And in those meetings, this group, this agency says that they were extorted for money. The alderman wanting to receive business for his own personal law firm.
Right, wanted to represent them for tax business, quote unquote.
Exactly. We know that he does have this business and actually represented the Trump Tower for many years, which is right down the river from us. No connection, as far as we know, regarding that, but just wanted to bring that up as one of his high-profile clients. And also in this process, looked to solicit money for a campaign regarding a local politician, not necessarily him, but a local politician. So what we see in these 37 pages is conversations. His phones were tapped. These conversations are recorded. And what we also learn is part of that raid, at least the one that happened on November 29th, the feds were looking for specific emails, exchanges between Burke as well as an alderman that he was working with in this transaction. What the group says is that Burke was basically holding up the building permit, specifically the parking lot permits on some of the renovations they were doing, which is something that they weren't familiar with or understood why it was happening, other than the fact that he was not giving, or they were not giving him the business he desired.
Now, this is a big deal for a lot of reasons, but one, because historically, every time Ed Burke has been investigated, and it's been there a number of times the feds have looked into him and his dealings, everybody, the overwhelming mindset was, oh, he's too smart, he's too slick, he's never going to get caught. Even if people thought they had him, he always got away. This time it seems like the government has really crossed their T's and dotted the I's. They seem to have a lot going if they were able to get this indictment.
It does seem that way based on how this is all laid out. Obviously not guilty until,
he's
innocent until proven guilty, I should say. Couple little interesting things that we learned out of court, too. In the next 48 hours, he must surrender 23 guns he had in his possession. And Jason Meisner with the Chicago Tribune reporting that those guns were discovered in his office. So
really?
Kind of makes an interesting little bit of information as they raided those offices. I'm sure if that's indeed where they were, they were just in his possession. He cannot travel outside of Chicago except to a home he has in Wisconsin. Cannot have contact with any of the victims laid out in this so-called victims laid out in this criminal complaint. So some restrictions put on, especially as he waits for his next court appearance.
And what was the bail again?
$10,000.
$10,000.
Yeah, which he should have no problem paying, and he's being processed right now from the reports we're getting.
Well, this is one of those things, and I heard you talking about this with John, where a lot of people just kind of assume that this is how business gets done. And it's, you know, there's the line that crosses from normal everyday business to, that's illegal. You can't really, you know, you can try to get contributions, you can try, but you can't hold up public permits or public services from somebody just because you want some money.
Well, and probably what is the strongest case that the federal government has in this is the fact that he wanted business for his private law firm, right?
Yes, I mean, right.
That, yeah, this which is a shame that we're saying that, but this is, you know, I mean, the fact that he's doing, according to this, public business in exchange for private business,
right,
is probably what drew the biggest red flag.
And again, the initial raid was November 29th. They spent hours in there. If you remember seeing the footage, they covered
the
his offices
paper,
with brown paper. Mm-hmm. They took everything out the back stairway. So this actually from November 29th to today is not a long time. So if they had, as you said, the wire, the phone taps, all of that, you would imagine that they found what they were looking for because things seem to have moved pretty quickly.
Well, and remember, they were back within, I want to say, a week to 10 days. Right. They went back to his office as well. We are getting some responses now from various politicians in the Chicago area. We know that a spokesperson for the mayor says, based on what I've seen in the complaint, the major, it says, he believes that this being the mayor believes that it is unacceptable for him to continue as chairman of the finance committee. There have already been some aldermen who have come out and spoke out against him, saying that they'd like to see him removed in one form or another, at least from that committee. So we'll see what this means politically for him moving forward.
Well, for those who don't know how much power Ed Burke actually has, he is solely in control of the $100 million workers' compensation program for the city. He controls millions of dollars of campaign funds, plays a crucial role in redrawing the city's ward maps, which has come under fire for how many years, you know, people with redistricting, things like that. So it is he is a very powerful man. Going back to all the way back to the council wars, I mean, he's often referred to as one of the last survivors. You know, he's a throwback to a different era of politician.
And he's kind of embraced that. I mean, he's been the historian for the city for quite some time. I mean, he was heavily involved in a lot of the celebrations, you know, of and anniversaries that have happened in the city. I know he brought the family of O'Hare in to kind of recognize them, their story, and the story of their relative who the airport is named after. So he's been heavily involved, too, in the history of Chicago, and has kind of inserted himself in part of that history as well.
I'm hearing a lot of stuff. So we will. I know you and Kim are going to be keeping up with what's going on. If anything breaks, if we see if his attorneys do have a press conference, we will definitely break in and carry that. But thank you for taking a few minutes.
Thank
now.
You, yeah.
I know you'll be in there. It's going to be a very, very long long afternoon, but we will continue to keep you updated. That's Ryan Burrow from ABC News and WGN News and everywhere else. Ryan Burrow is everywhere. And
looks like President Trump is speaking, by the way, at his own press conference, so that should make for some news, too,
right,
moving forward.
Covering that as well. All right, let's do this. It is 3:30 on 720 WGN. That means it's time for the news. Here's Kim Gordon.
Sun'll come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun.
Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVellantes. They'll be back on Monday. But today, as I sit here in the Allstate Skyline Studios overlooking Chicago, I see... You know who made this possible? If I blamed him for the clouds, I must thank him for the sunshine. Tom, you promised that the sun would come out, and look at that. It is gorgeous.
You know, you are bathed in sunshine in those beautiful new WGN radio studios. That is the most naturally lit radio operation I have ever seen in my life. Beautiful
it's
studios.
Terrific.
And boy, I'll tell you, Brian, you really can soak up the sun, can't you, when it comes out?
It is. Well, I don't want to say anything, but I've got my shirt off, and I'm all oiled up. I'm catching some afternoon rays, Tom. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you're only a couple of blocks from Oak Street Beach, so, you know, that's the next move.
Sure, I do a polar plunge. Everything works out fine.
Sure, absolutely. Hey, you're not fighting ice this year. What's there to complain about, you know?
It was gorgeous. So everything that we saw the last couple days has moved on, and we finally, I don't care... I'm one of these guys. I don't care how cold it is. If the sun's out, I can deal with it.
It's absolutely true. Well, the next 8 days, that's through next Friday, will average nearly 13 degrees above normal. And there's every indication this warmer than normal trend, with some little dips on occasion, will average above normal for the next 14 to 16 days.
Very nice.
Yeah. There's a little, every now and then you get a little prod of cooler air. I'll tell you, for those planning to go to the Bears game on Sunday,
yes,
there'll be an east to southeast wind that blows in off the water. So I imagine at Soldier Field, there probably will be, say, a 41-degree game time temperature, okay, something like that, while inland areas go back to the mid-40s again. But these are, you know, this is essentially November and January around here.
Yeah,
weather-wise.
I'm seeing the forecast for, like you said, 40s for the weekend, and I'm happy about it. I don't think I'm alone. I don't think there's anybody, and if there is, we'll have to talk to them because they have some sort of issues, who are saying, boy, I wish it was like last year when it was zero.
Oh, I know. What a difference. We're running 32 degrees warmer than January's open a year ago. And you know, Brian, I've got a U.S. map in front of me with all the current temperatures on it. It is mild from coast to coast. The only exceptions are the valleys out west, where that cold air settles like milk in the bottom of a bowl because of its density.
Uh-huh.
And the warm air that comes in off the Pacific runs up and over it. So they get a lot of cloud cover and like freezing drizzle and so forth this time of the year, even though it stays cold near the ground and on the mountaintops there. But then the air emerges into the plains, sinks out of the mountains, compresses, it warms, dries out in the process. And you've got 40-degree temperatures through the Dakotas, where only 2 days ago they had some single-digit to near zero daytime highs. It's just amazing how we've scoured Arctic air from all but extreme northern Maine, really, across the country.
This roller coaster that we're on, I know you said this is kind of the way it's going to be for the rest of the winter, but it's a little crazy.
It is. It is. And by the way, don't write off some cold spells yet, or even a snow that we shovel. There's nothing like that in sight right now, but I'm sure we're not done with that totally. But
no, we've got February. February is always that fickle, awful month.
Yes.
Thankfully, it's short, but it's never good.
Well, it's 9 of the past 12 months have been above average, and so we continue that trend. We have persistence that's at work here. That's when you've got a pattern that's run for a while and it continues running. We call that persistence in meteorology.
Sure you do. So, well, why wouldn't you?
I know.
Now, I know you don't dabble in any of the seven deadly sins, Tom, but I'm going to go with envy for a minute.
Uh-huh.
We all know, you said next week you're going to Alaska and then you're going to Hawaii.
Yes.
What is it? Give us a forecast for your time in Hawaii. What's it going to look like when you touch down?
Oh, it'll be pretty nice. The one thing you notice at this time of the year, because there are a lot more active storms going across the Pacific to the north, you get larger waves.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's always interesting to watch the big waves. Heaven knows I'm not out in them, but I, these.
You're not going to do any competitive surfing when you go this time?
No, I'll tell you, I've gotten to the point. You know, been there, done that.
You sure? Yeah.
If you believe that, I've.
Well, listen, you got to retire on top, Tom. Yeah,
exactly.
That's what they say. You don't need to be hanging up at the North Shore with all the young kids trying to prove something.
Absolutely, or dead on the rocks out there. More likely.
That's another option. Sure, likely. That's unfortunate.
I know, and the problem is, a lot of those beaches out there, they're very rocky. But I'll tell you what I'm interested in seeing, Brian, is this volcano. When I was out there in June, it was erupting, Kilauea, on the big island. And that thing put out as much lava as it had at any time in literally the recent past, decades.
Is it always that fast moving, the lava? Because I watched the coverage, it seemed like things were moving very quickly. And I always thought of lava as a very slow moving kind of like you could outrun it.
No, that was running at about 18, 19 miles per hour, even 20 miles per hour at times. So, and that stuff's about 2,000 degrees. It's really hot. And I got on the boat that went out there where the water, the lava went into the water. And
yeah.
It was interesting. And that, puts out a cloud of hydrochloric acid gas that fortunately the easterly winds were blowing the other way. So you were safe being out there. But the day we went out, everybody was sick. We were in 12-foot waves, and the water was breaking over the bow, and it felt like bathtub water as you got within, a couple hundred yards of that volcano. But it was, Brian, I wouldn't have missed that for my life. I put that up, some of the video I shot up on the Facebook page.
Yeah, how is that going to change the coastal geography in that area?
Well, it literally eliminated an entire bay. And scores, hundreds of homes that were along the south coastline there. It was amazing. There was a lake that was filled in 45 minutes by the lava.
Unbelievable.
It was incredible. Now what's happened is the lava drained out of that volcano, the bottom of the volcano settled. So now you've got a crater that's about 1,000 feet deep out there. And it used to be just a little break in the land, in the crust of the earth out there. So it's quite interesting, but they think this may have shut down now for some time, and it will be interesting to see.
And does an eruption of that magnitude affect long-term the weather patterns?
No. That's a very different type of volcano than the one, say, that just went off in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
The little, baby Krakatoa, as they call it. Now, that's that's the top of a mountain. It's like Mount St. Helens. It has the big cone. Those volcanoes can reach tens of thousands of feet into the atmosphere, like Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa out there in Hawaii that are quiet now.
Right.
But so those are the ones that are explosive and propel ash and all way up into the atmosphere where stratospheric winds distribute it, and it changes the world's weather. What they had in Hawaii was more a lava-producing phenomenon. And while there were explosions in the immediate vicinity, it wasn't near as catastrophic as the explosions that send waves of lava down the side and these pyroclastic clouds that are, you know, superheated and literally kill people because of the heat of the darn things. But so it's a different ballgame.
Okay.
But it'd be kind of interesting to see. That's why the Hawaiian Islands and islands like them are there on Earth. It's a fascinating geologic
It sure
process.
Is. And you're going to be you're going to the Big Island. What else do you do when you're in Hawaii? Because we talk about Alaska all the time because of your home there, and we talked about that yesterday. So, which is fascinating because Alaska is one of my that's one of the places on my bucket list. I have to go to Alaska. I can't.
Well, when you decide to go, you let me know. That is an incredible place. You wonder what the Tsar was thinking about when he sold it to us. Back years
ago. Big mistake.
It was a big mistake. But apparently he got tired of traveling all the way from Moscow over there, you know, because it's like, I don't know, 10 time zones away. And you can imagine those days.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would take a while.
And also, some people said he hunted. So he thought that all the animals he wanted to hunt were gone. I've heard that one.
That's a big another mistake.
Yeah,
because the wildlife there is crazy. So we know what you do when you're in Alaska. What do you do when you're in Hawaii?
Dabble.
Well, we know you're not going swimming this year.
Yeah, wander into the water.
Okay,
and
stay like calf deep. I would nothing more than calf deep for you this year.
All right, I'm writing this down. I'll do that. No, you know what? And it's interesting to travel around on the east side of those islands. You've got tropical rainforest, and on the west side you've got droughts because of the way the easterly winds blow, and they upslope on the east side of the islands, and so it rains. I mean, look at. The movie they shot out there, Jurassic Park.
Yes.
That was shot in Hawaii. And that was shot
very accurately.
Yeah, it was shot on the rainforest on the east side of the island, of Kauai. And then the west side where they put the resorts, because the air downslopes and dries out and the sun is out more of the time, it can be like a desert.
Do they have dinosaurs, though?
I haven't seen them.
Okay.
But I'll keep my eye open for them.
Maybe you need to go out at dusk, Tom. It's like seeing deer around here. You have to go. That's when the dinosaurs graze.
I'll tell you.
There at dusk.
The day I come back and tell you I've seen dinosaurs in Hawaii is the time, you know, give me my walking papers.
Yeah, you've had a couple too many Mai Tais.
Yep, that's it.
Very nice. Well, Tom, can you give us a quick forecast before we let you go?
Yeah, it's a nice, simple one. Sunny days, clear, cool nights. We'll have a high tomorrow of about 45. 47 on Saturday, which is extraordinary. Normal high this time of year is around 31. And the nighttime lows, upper 20s, low 30s. For the Bears, on Sunday, it'll cloud over during the day. We think it'll rain at night. But after the game, the way it looks now, and we'll have probably a 41-degree temperature at Soldier Field at game time.
Excellent.
With a pretty brisk east-southeast wind. Might be running in the 12 to 18 mile per hour range. So, inland areas could get up to the mid-40s on Sunday, and then it'll rain Sunday night and Monday.
Sounds like an excellent weekend. Thank you, as always, Tom. We will talk to you again tomorrow.
Okay, Brian.
Listen, we thank you when it's good. It's that way we can blame you when it's bad. You got to take the good with the bad,
absolutely.
The bitter and the sweet, Tom.
I view that as part of my function, you know. You just take me out to the woodshed and let me have it, and then you feel better about the weather yourself.
Well, we try to do it as gently as possible.
You do.
Thank you, Tom. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Brian.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye, guys.
That's Tom Skilling. You can hear him every day here with Roe and Anna. On the other side, oh, man, we mentioned this yesterday, the teens are being banished from everywhere. First, let's find out what Kim has coming up at 4 o'clock.
Brian, local politicians reacting to the extortion charges against Chicago Alderman Ed Burke.
If you were with us yesterday, we were talking about North Riverside Mall, where there is increased security because of teen uprising. That may be a little strong, but overwhelming teen activity on Saturday. Last night, there were police cars all over the area in preparation in case there was another gathering, which had been rumored and talked about on social media. Well, now Water Tower Place is getting into the act. They have cracked down on teens starting at 4 o'clock Friday and Saturday. There is a curfew. If you are under 18, you are not allowed in Water Tower Place without an adult who is 21 or older. If you are an adult, you are allowed to have two people with you who are aged 10 to 17. If they're under 10, you can have as many kids as you want. Could bring 27 toddlers with you to Water Tower Place. They won't care. But if you bring 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds, then you are in trouble. So they're going to have trained security public safety officers inside the mall. They're going to have them at all the doors, and they're going to be checking IDs. And if you're already in the mall and you don't have a wristband that shows you've been checked, they have the ability to come up and talk to you and ask you to show ID, and then they can toss you out of the mall.
What? Is this like the club?
Yeah, times have changed, huh?
Well, that's because last week they had to shut down the mall an hour early because of too many teens. The announcement, less than a week. Saturday evening, an incident forced the mall to close an hour early, according to Alderman Brian Hopkins of the Second Ward.
And it's not just a lot of kids deciding to go to the mall. It's an organized...
No, it's an organized takeover, okay. like it was in Riverside, where a couple hundred kids come in and they start running all over and they're causing problems. They're not there. It's not like you would go to the mall with three or four of your friends to go shopping or to see a movie or just go hang in the food court and get yourself a Cinnabon. These are organized on social media to go and take over, and the express purpose of them is to cause trouble until you get thrown out, to see how long you can be there with your big groups to get thrown out.
So that's what I was going to ask. Do they have is it a protest or a reason they're doing it, or
nope,
they just want
to... just to be jerks.
Oh.
Just to be teenage jerks, that's all. Now, Brian, who is Ro's technical producer, brought up a good point. He said, listen, what if I go down with my sons and my nephew, and now I've got three kids with me or four kids with me? I'm a responsible adult. I've got, I'm going to go down there. I'm going to spend some money. And that's an unfortunate byproduct of this, because there are going to be people. What if you're a parent and you have three teenagers? They're all your kids. Well, what are you going to do? Sophie's choice, leave one of them in the car?
You sit outside,
I'll come out and get you.
It's going to be like to the discretion of the police officers.
I don't think so, because that would lead to way too much trouble. If it's left up, either going to be, it's all or nothing. Because if, you don't know what's going on in some of these public safety officers' minds, and if they're given latitude, well, that group looks a little shady. So I'm going to enforce it hardcore. And, look at that. There's a nice family. We're gonna let that slide. You can't. It's either everybody has to be following the rule or not.
I think they're just trying to scare the kids a little bit. Like, hey, don't come down here. You're going to be kicked out. But it's more, I don't think they're going to enforce it.
Nope.
I don't think so.
No, I think they will.
I think it's a bluff.
Really? There's no chance it's a bluff.
I mean, the mall wants it too, because
the mall doesn't want to shut down early.
Well, they're affecting business. Yeah,
yeah, and you get enough people who are going to say, "Hey, man, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to Water Tower." Last week I was there, and there were huge groups of teens, and they had to shut the mall down, and I didn't feel. And then there were attacks at the Red Line stop by huge groups of teens. The city doesn't want that happening on the Gold Coast. This is not a bluff.
Shouldn't
happen
anywhere.
For real.
It's just really weird, because I would go to the mall with my friends all the time when I was a kid, but we never thought to do any of that stuff.
Well, you didn't have social media to be able to even organize. That's
right. We were just social beings.
Right. We just talked
to each other.
We talked to each other.
There's no need to turn ugly on us, Violetta. Just because we went and had a Cinnabon.
I'm just saying we talk to people in real life, too.
No, you don't.
All right. You two can argue about this while we're in the break. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVellante, 720 WGN. That, of course, the theme to NBC Nightly News. And a man who has been keeping his eye on everything that's happening in Washington and around the world today, the anchor for the weekday edition of NBC Nightly News and Dateline NBC, Lester Holt, joins me now on WGN. Lester, Happy New Year. Great to talk to you.
Hey, Brian, Happy New Year. It's been a long time. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. So, a lot going on. The 116th Congress sworn in today. A lot of historic firsts in this group.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi, in terms of gender and diversity, we've never seen anything like this. And of course, Nancy Pelosi for the second time taking the gavel today as Speaker of the House. Democrats now have all this additional power with the majority in the House. But I think the word of the next 2 years is going to have to be compromise. That's the only way things will get done now that you have this divide in power.
Well, and it seems, we do think that compromise has to happen, but I don't hold out much hope, unfortunately, since the Republicans had controlled both houses of Congress and things still weren't getting done. So this just seems to be another impediment to things moving along in the direction we need them to move in.
Yeah, it's kind of like, congratulations, here's the gavel, and oh, by the way, the government is partially shut down. Day 13, and right now President Trump's showing no signs of backing off his $5 billion wall. He came out briefly in the press room with some members of the Border Patrol Association to talk about the need for the wall, and reports that he may sit down with some members of Congress tomorrow. But we're still in this impasse, and we're getting close to payday, what would be payday for hundreds of thousands of federal employees. But right now, Nancy Pelosi, she's got the gavel, she's got a little more power, and Democrats don't seem in a mind to fold. They think they've got a pretty strong hand.
Well, and the Democrats have come out and said, listen, we're going to send a bill to the Senate. It's everything the Senate had approved a couple weeks ago, except for funding for the wall. We're still going to put in temporary money to keep a Border Patrol and everything funded, but just not with the wall money. And that doesn't seem to be sitting well with Republican leaders in the Senate, who are saying, yeah, we agreed to that, but we're not passing anything along to the president unless there's that $5 billion in there.
Yeah, and the White House kind of saying that if something were to come that way, his advisors would recommend, vetoing it. So there doesn't seem to be a real appetite on the Republican side to take up any of these things right now. The president is insisting, he wants this wall, something like $5.6 billion. And he hasn't, we keep waiting for him to see if he leaves some room to compromise or do some linguistic, backflips on this, but he's not. And I think his feeling is that's what folks sent him to Washington to do, and that's what he's going to do.
Well, and it seemed like we had a little movement a couple weeks ago, right before the holidays, that the president was willing to give a little to get a little. And then
Until he wasn't.
Yeah, and then it all changed in the drop of a hat.
Yeah, and I think that's the frustration, quietly of some Republicans there. Like, we want to work together here, but you got to protect us on these things. They thought they had a deal to kind of kick the can down the road and take this up. And of course, Democrats right now are suggesting, they split this in two, fund those things that they all agree on, which is most things, and then pick up the border wall thing. But this is an interesting standoff. As games of chicken go, both sides are deep in it. And no one's blinking.
Yeah, and the president really has seemed in the last few days to dig in his heels. And I don't know what could make him change his mind, if there is anything that would make him change his mind.
Yeah, I mean, his supporters say that he feels like he would be foolish at this point to turn around and back down. And that's why I think we're all looking for signs from both sides of an opening or something that might allow a little face-saving here. But, for the Republicans, the issue, of course, is leverage. They lost a lot of leverage today when Nancy Pelosi got that gavel. And the playing field has changed, over just a few minutes today in Washington. So this is becoming unlike any other standoff we've had over shutdowns. This is becoming a real mystery.
Well, you would think that some in the Republican Party, the leadership, say, all right, listen, we've got a chance now to show our constituents that we're not, we don't want the shutdown to continue. So let's see if we can pass along everything that we agreed to, which, as you mentioned, is pretty much everything in the government except for the wall. And then, if we're looking to maybe distance ourselves from the president or whatever it is, then we don't look like the people who are being stubborn and saying, nope, nothing's going to happen, the government can stay shut down.
Yeah, from the outside, you can understand how reasonable people might think that might be an out for both sides. But you know, what's going on, you know, in their minds and behind the scenes is a little unclear. You know, normally in these things, you start to see one side or the other tip their hand and, you know, well, let's not call it a wall, let's call it this, and let's, you know, squeeze this money out of that. But you're not seeing any of that play out. This could be a make or break moment for the president. I say that cautiously because we have seen, you know, he's got staying power.
Sure, yeah. There have been how many make or break moments since his campaign started? There are a lot of those.
Let me look into my files. It may take a while.
Yeah, it'll take you a little bit. Now, you mentioned that there is a possibility of a meeting tomorrow with Democratic leadership and congressional leadership. Is that set in stone? Is that still, well, maybe we'll meet, maybe we won't?
I'm not sure if it's clear. I'm trying to find it. I saw something about 11:30 tomorrow. Now I can't find it. But I don't know if it's in stone right now. But they do. But the question is it going to be like yesterday, a briefing as opposed to a negotiation? You know, you can always sit around a table and you know, talk about your position, but that's not necessarily a negotiation.
Right. Let's turn to one other story that people have been following very closely. Paul Whelan, the Detroit area businessman who was arrested in Russia on espionage charges. Yesterday, reports came out that the ambassador had spoken to him, and today reports are coming out that his Russian lawyer has spoken to him. What's the latest on that?
Well, the Russian news agency is giving a little bit of detail now of what they say happened, that he was arrested while meeting in a hotel room with a Russian citizen. It's alleged that he got a thumb drive that had the names of security agency employees. You know, his family, of course, says he's there for a wedding. Sure. It does turn out, though, that he had been very active in the past on you know, Russian social media sites and had engaged, you know, Russian people. You know, where the suspicion lies within that is a little unclear, but at least we're getting some semblance. And the lawyer is acknowledging that some of this may, you know, may be leading up to a spy swap. You know, it's, you know, remember Maria Butina, sure, the Russian woman who pleaded guilty to not registering as a foreign agent of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little unclear, but we're getting at least a little more information about the circumstances of his arrest.
All right. Well, we will continue to watch that and everything else. Lester, I know you got to get ready for TV. I appreciate the time this afternoon. Always great to talk to you.
All right, likewise. We'll hope to talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. That's Lester Holt. For more, tune in tonight to NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt at 5:30. Let's do this, and we'll come back. A lot of response to the mall story. People very upset. People upset that the teens can't just wander free. Free-range teens should be the rule of the day. I don't quite agree with that. Let's find out what Kim has in the newsroom at 4:30.
Brian, two high-powered Chicago aldermen both in court today for different reasons.
This week on Chicago's Best, it's the best of the best, from tacos to burgers to the most drool-worthy. Tune in to see who won Chicago's Best of 2018. It's Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Getting a lot of response to the story about Water Tower Place cracking down, throwing a curfew from both sides. Some people saying it is a good idea. One texter from the 815, the thing about the restriction is a bunch of expletive deleted at the mall, just because the mall can't handle its own security problems, just like school uniforms, because the school couldn't enforce its own dress code. It forced parents to buy an extra wardrobe for their kids, which some of us just can't afford. It's a sissy's way out. I disagree with the dress code thing. I think the dress code is a brilliant idea. It cuts down on a lot of distractions at school. In the end, it's going to be a lot cheaper for parents to go to Walmart and buy navy or khaki pants and a white or a navy blue polo shirt that they have in the uniform sections than have your kids come home and go, oh, so-and-so has a North Face coat, and she's got Under Armour, and she's wearing Air Jordans, and he's got, you know, the Yeezys. I can't afford to get Yeezys.
My kids wore uniforms. I loved it.
I think it's great.
And they liked it. You didn't fight in the morning.
Yes.
Everybody knew what they had to get up and put on.
Exactly.
You came home, you changed your clothes.
I loved my uniform.
Really?
Yeah. But like you said, I mean, it's just easy. You don't have to think
easy.
About anything.
There's no thinking about it. There's no distraction about it. There's nothing. So I...
Except for if you forgot to wash the one shirt you have.
Well, then you got to buy at least two shirts.
Well, yeah, but unless like you only had like one long sleeve, one short
sleeve. Oh, okay. See, for us...
It was a thing.
We didn't have uniforms in high school. We did in grade school. But it was basically... The uniform was... you had to wear a collared shirt and dress pants.
Yeah, when I started going to college, I'm like, what am I going to do?
Oh, that was the greatest. flip-flops and shorts. I'm like, woohoo, well, look how grown up I am. But I love dress codes for elementary schools and high schools. I don't think that's laziness. I don't think it's a school not being able to enforce dress codes. I think it makes education a whole lot easier. And as for malls not being able to handle their own security, if you're Water Tower Place or if you're North Riverside Mall or whatever you are, you schedule enough people for an average day. If you can't continuously anticipate that you're going to have a planned influx of 200 kids that you had no idea these kids were coming. This is above and beyond, and it drains all your security personnel and takes all the manpower. There have been a lot of malls who've been doing this forever. I got a text and I was reminded of this, that the Mall of America has had this forever on the weekends, where after 6 p.m., kids have to have an adult with them. One person in the group has to be over 21. Somebody said from the 708, we live close to North Riverside Mall. I never have allowed my girls to hang out at that mall. My son's almost 16. We let him and 3 friends go downtown today. That's the gang of 4 kids that were running around. Today.
Well, here's the thing, too. I was in Water Tower on Sunday, and yeah. I was behaving myself. But,
are you sure?
Were you with an adult?
I promise.
Kid was running around American Girl.
My nephew, who was watching me to make sure I was behaving.
Okay, good.
But we were in there, and I have to tell you, the thing about Water Tower is, first of all, it was packed.
Yes.
There were huge crowds of people waiting to go up and down the elevators, even the escalators. So there, it's so split up and it's so up and down. And if there are kids causing trouble in there, it's hard to even get to them because of the sheer numbers and the way it's designed.
And this is not a group of 8 kids coming into the mall. These are organized groups of 100 or more kids coming into these malls, and their sole purpose of being there is to disrupt business until they get thrown out. So it's that's what they're doing. I've seen, because I live right by North Riverside, so I saw all the screen grabs that they found about these kids organizing this stuff.
Well, and it stinks for the kids that aren't participating in this. You know,
right. If you're a good kid, you should be able to go to the mall.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, the kids that are there who were like, I didn't know this was going on, but
right.
I'm getting kicked out now. At 4 p.m. does seem early, though.
Well, that's... Listen, that's when the things start, at Friday and Saturday, early afternoon.
If you know you have good kids, then you know there's got to be one parent and a group of friends who can go to the mall and be the chaperone for these kids.
Yes,
it doesn't mean they have to walk around with them. They can go sit in a restaurant and
have dinner and just make sure
you know what they're doing and where they're at.
Right, right. Because if they're questioned, they say, "My mom's downstairs." Or
you have to be with them to get into the mall. Or if they're if your kid's wandering around, I can't wait. Brian is ready to debate this, but unfortunately, Brian, we have to go to the news. Perhaps, I'm sure in the break, I will hear all sorts of things, and perhaps we will share them. All right, it is 4:30 on 720. Oh, no, we still have another minute. I forgot we don't have another break. Do you want, what's your point? You seem very, very moved by this discussion.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, there we go. This is my problem with the whole thing, okay? If you're going to start banning teens... from coming into
they're not the banned they just have to
well,
be a company
and be a company okay who's going to determine how old everybody is? Are they going to have people being carded?
Yes,
you have to show ID.
Yes, they're
right.
You have to show ID.
That's after they get the ban, correct?
No, if you once at 4 o'clock, they are going to have people standing at every entrance door to Water Tower Place to walk in. If you look under 18, they are going to ask for your ID, and you have to show them.
What if you're already in there, though?
They've got people wandering around. They have other public safety officers who are walking through the mall. And if you don't have your wristband, they can come up to you and say, "Excuse me, sir, you don't. Can I see your ID, please? You don't look like you're 18, and you're obviously wandering around by yourself or with another friend."
Well, and the idea is, if 200 kids are trying to get in at the same time, they're going to stand out. But if you've been there all day hanging out, you're probably not part of this planned.
Right. But they listen. I'm getting texts. Louis Joliet Mall in Joliet has had this for a long time. Cherryvale Mall in Rockford has had these kind of things for a long time. A lot of malls have these. It's just in the last couple weeks, you've had 2 big local malls have issues, and so now they're instituting the same policy that's been going on at a lot of places for a long time. Now, when I was a kid, I used to go to the mall, but the most I'd go with was like 3 or 4 people. You know, we'd wander around. We wouldn't cause any trouble, but times have changed. All right. I know Brian Brian's like, eh, listen, they're losing out. Just go into the single stores. Take spend your money at those stores. Don't spend it at the mall.
I just see it going south really fast.
Oh, sure. The first time somebody cards one person and not somebody else, there's going to be trouble.
And that's the problem.
Yes.
Are they going to card everybody or just the kids they think is causing problems?
Well, on paper, right now, it's everybody. That's in theory. We'll see what happens in practice. All right, 4:30 on 720 WGN. Time for the news. Kim Gordon. Brian Noonan in for Roe Khan and Anna DeVellante is here till 6. Then it's Blackhawks hockey. Chris Bowden has your pregame at 6 in advance of a 6:30 puck drop. The Blackhawks in Long Island taking on the Islanders in New York on Long Island taking on the
Uniondale.
Islanders. Andy Mazur is here. Good to see you, Andy.
Good to see you.
Again, the hardest working man at WGN Radio. You've been here for about 12 hours at this point. Very exciting.
All good.
You know who else is working hard? Adam Hoge. He is out at Hallis Hall. He is talking about the Bears. He is covering the practice. He is joining us now. Big game on Sunday, the wild card playoff game, Bears-Eagles, 3:40 kickoff time at Soldier Field. Adam, what's the update from Hallis Hall?
Well, the good news, guys, is that Eddie Jackson, the Bears Pro Bowl safety, practiced today for the first time since injuring that ankle back against the Packers a few weeks ago. He's missed the last two games, so it was a good sign to get him out there. Now, I will tell you, he did not look 100% to me. We only get to watch a very short portion of practice before they kick us out, but just going through some individual drills, didn't look 100%, but looked like a guy that could play on Sunday. My guess is he will give it a go, and then we'll just have to kind of watch the flow of the game to see how effective he is. But this is an Eagles team that likes to throw the ball deep. The Bears have not given up a whole lot of big plays downfield, and a big reason for that is because Eddie Jackson has been such a dangerous safety back there on the back end for the Bears.
That's an interesting departure, too, because it sounded like, from the sound that you sent us earlier today from Coach Nagy, that he wasn't going to practice today.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday there seemed to be some optimism that he would practice, and then they were going to go through some testing ahead of time to see if they'd give it a go, and ultimately the trainers decided that he should probably sit out one more day. So he was out there today, ankle taped. Again, I don't know. We're not told or able to watch how, you know, the percentage of reps he went through in actual team drills when they're scheming for Sunday. But, you know, at this point, I would expect he did a lot because it's not like these practices are like training camp. The pads aren't on. They're not going through, you know, crazy stuff here. They're just really trying to get ready for Sunday. And I think the goal is still for Eddie Jackson to play.
Now, last Sunday at the Vikings, everybody was watching Kyle Long. He was coming back after the injury. All reports, everything is fine, correct?
Absolutely. And I think he will play the entire game, of course, barring some kind of setback. They really just wanted to get him against the Vikings on Sunday some reps. Mark Helfrich, the Bears offensive coordinator today, kind of compared it to a preseason game. Well, obviously, it wasn't a preseason game, but for him, for Kyle Long, just in terms of, you know, getting his feet under him, getting the conditioning level back up, and they did that. He played well, I thought, and the goal this week for everybody, Kyle, Matt Nagy, the entire offense, they want him to play the full game against the Eagles.
A lot being made of the lack of experience for a lot of the Bears players, especially Mitch Trubisky. Last time he faced the Eagles, did not go very well. The Bears took a huge pounding. Obviously, he has evolved a lot since then. You know, things are completely different than last time he was in Philly. What's the feeling around him and around the rest of the team as they gear up for this big playoff game, which a lot of people had said, listen, last week in Minnesota had all the earmarks of a playoff game anyway?
Yeah, it did, and I thought it was by far the toughest atmosphere Mitch Trubisky's had to deal with. He didn't have Allen Robinson, his go-to guy, going into the game. Then Anthony Miller gets banged up during the game. Then Taylor Gabriel gets banged up during the game. So there he is. He's out there throwing to Kevin White and Javon Wims. Guys, he's not been throwing the ball to much this season, and those guys stepped up, made some plays. Mitch made some good throws. They moved the ball on third down once again against the Vikings. Which you may remember going in that first game against the Vikings, that defense was setting records for how good they were on third down. And the Bears were 50% against the Vikings in the first matchup, and once again played well on third down. Behind Mitch Trubisky, the money down. And he's been over 75% now overall in his last three games. He has not thrown an interception. Only three touchdowns to show for that. But, these defenses have adjusted to the Bears and really gone a little bit more zone and trying to take away the deep pass and just forcing Mitch to dink and dunk underneath. And I think the thinking there is that eventually he's going to make a mistake and throw an interception. The reality is he has not done that. He's performed well and been patient and been good with his progressions and his mechanics the last three games after struggling against the Rams in a game they managed to win there as well. So I got to be honest, in this game Sunday, I actually think Mitch can get away with a mistake or two and the Bears will be fine as long as their defense comes to play. And quite frankly, there's no indication that the Bears' defense will struggle whatsoever because they've just been dominant over the last 4 weeks.
All right, defensively, let's talk a little bit about Vic Fangio because I know there's a lot of questions about what the rule actually is.
Yes.
Whether or not another team can come in and interview a guy while the playoffs are going on. Are there technicalities involved in there that they can sneak in on an off day?
Here's the rules. Okay. Very simple, is he's not allowed to interview this week. So the only coaches that are still in the playoffs right now that can interview this week are ones that have a first-round bye. So obviously the Bears don't have a first-round bye. So he's locked into coaching this week. He cannot do an interview until the game is over on Sunday. Now, starting Sunday night, immediately after the game, he is allowed to do interviews for the next week, even though the Bears play. If they win, they'll play again the following Saturday, and it's a shorter week. They lose a day because they're going from Sunday to Saturday, and they're going to have to fly to the West Coast to L.A., so it's not the most ideal situation. But there will be a window in there probably Sunday night, Monday morning, where he's allowed to interview by NFL rules, and I'm sure the Bears will accompany that as much as possible. They don't want him dealing with it the entire week. Obviously, they're gonna have a game to prep for, but he is allowed to do so. And then once that window closes next week, he would not be allowed to interview again, have a second interview until either the Bears season is over or the Bears make the Super Bowl, and he could do it in the bye week before the Super Bowl.
Okay, because now, is it confirmed then that he is going to interview with Denver on Monday, or is this still all just speculation?
That's the plan. It's not entirely confirmed when that interview will take place. Yes, he's going to interview with Denver. I don't know if it'll take place Sunday night or Monday morning, but probably somewhere in that window, and then we'll just have to see how it goes, I guess.
Now, the Bears' offensive line has been playing very well, giving Mitch a lot of time. Having Kyle Long back is obviously going to make the line that much stronger. But you look across the line, and Eagles have Pro Bowl defensive tackle Fletcher Cox, who is, he's just a monster. Do you foresee them doing anything different to try to protect Mitch more from Cox, or Fletcher Cox? I got to watch the sentence structure on that one. Don't pull there. It's going on Nick D's out of context. I have a feeling.
Definitely.
All right, so you know what I'm saying, Adam.
Yes.
They've got a defensive tackle that is COX, who is coming hard.
Oh, Jesus. Look, hey, I'd look to the blueprint of what they did with Aaron Donald against the Rams a few weeks ago, about a month ago. He came in. And by the way, Aaron Donald was defensive player of the month, despite the fact that he did nothing against the Bears in that game. So it tells you how good of a season he's had and how good of a player and how good of a job the Bears did in that game. Now, sometimes they left James Daniels, the rookie left guard from Iowa, one-on-one in that situation. Most of the time, they brought him some help. That was with Brian Witzman, the backup in on the right side, who was out there for Kyle Long. So the fact that Kyle's back, I think, only helps the situation. The Bears have had answers all season long. Yeah. Hasn't always been perfect on that offensive line, but it's definitely not been a huge weakness. And so I got to say, I'm not all that concerned about that matchup against the Philadelphia front, which is a good front. But the Bears have – these guys just keep rising to the occasion, and that's one of the great things about this team. And I don't see any reason why it won't continue in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was interesting to listen to today to Coach Nagy as well about the message that he's trying to deliver out there, Adam, about the fact you just kind of make it business as usual, not to make this game any more important in their minds. And mm-hmm. I guess guys are saying it back to him. They're saying, hey, we're just staying within ourselves. We're just being ourselves, right?
Yeah, be you, right? Be you. Look – it's been business as usual this week. The locker room's been the exact same the last couple days. They got a couple mini basketball hoops up there. The guys always like playing basketball, and you know, they got some card games going on the couches during the locker room. I mean, granted, we're only in there for 45 minutes of the entire day, but it's been the same vibe. It's a confident vibe. Mitch has been loose. He's been around. He's, you know, he doesn't look like somebody that's worried about this being his first playoff game. So, you know, maybe it'll tighten up as things get going here a little bit. And obviously, once that ball gets kicked off Sunday, that might change. But they've kept it the same this week, and the players have responded. I haven't seen any differences.
Hey, real quick, we mentioned Eddie Jackson. What about Aaron Lynch? Anything updated on him?
Yeah, he did not practice again today, and he still hasn't practiced since he hurt his elbow in that same game against the Packers. So I would put his status more in doubt for this week. And remember, they didn't put either one of those players on injured reserve, which is always a sign that they expect them to come back at some point. But there's still a lot of time between now and a possible Super Bowl, which is basically still a month away. So just because he hasn't gone on IR, Aaron Lynch, that is, doesn't mean he's going to be coming back anytime soon. They might just be saving him in case he's available a few weeks from now. That's a little bit harder of a situation to read than Eddie Jackson right now. But, right, I don't think Aaron Lynch will play this week.
Adam, I know you're up there focused on the Bears, but any news coming out of Philadelphia? Nick Foles injured at the end of the game last week. They said everything should be fine. He's still going to play on Sunday, correct?
Yeah, and he was limited in practice yesterday with that ribs injury, which I believe he actually suffered 2 weeks ago against the Texans. Jadeveon Clowney hit him right in the ribs with his helmet, and then it may have been reaggravated last week at some point, which means it's something to watch. Now, if Nick Foles was full go today, but does he take a shot during the game? Is there anything that makes it worse? You know, Nate Sudfeld is a guy with hardly any experience. He's the backup right now, and that could be something that plays out in this game, depending on how that goes. They have a lot of guys on their injury report, though. Michael Bennett, Martellus's brother, has a foot injury. He's not practiced the last couple of days, and even Fletcher Cox is listed as limited the last 2 days with a knee injury. And a couple other key guys popped up there today. Avante Maddox, he's a young corner that's having a good season. He just came on the injury report today with an oblique. Wendell Smallwood, one of the running backs, has a hand injury. So they're actually banged up. I think most of these guys will go. But I actually think the Bears are the healthier team.
Before we let you go, any blackboard material coming from Alshon Jeffrey?
You know, I don't think so. He's never been that great at expressing himself in interviews. I think he was actually trying to downplay this idea going back to Chicago. I listened to the audio. We actually played the audio on the Hogan Johns podcast this morning. It's one of those quotes where if you read it, it looks bad. And he basically said Chicago was just my workplace.
Yeah,
you know, he doesn't really miss it. If you listen to the audio though, he's just not great at expressing himself. So I don't think he meant any harm at all.
Well, that's all right. How many of these guys actually really live here all year? You know,
not many.
Yeah, so it is for most professional athletes. You go to your city, you work, and then you live wherever you want to live. So that and that's not that wouldn't count as blackboard material because you're not calling out the team.
Right.
You're not calling out anybody like, oh, I'm going to torch the defense.
Or the
city in general. It's just that's where I worked and that's it.
Well, and his comments on the field were much different. I don't know if you saw those, but he blatantly called the turf at Soldier Field terrible.
But who hasn't? I was going to say, so that makes him unique how?
Well, yeah, all I'm saying is he made that much more clear, whereas I think he was actually just trying to avoid the talk on Chicago.
Probably.
But let's not mix things up. I mean, it didn't exactly end well here.
No.
The Bears didn't express a huge desire to bring him back, and he ended up in Philadelphia. Sure. He won a Super Bowl. It's okay. It could be a mutual parting of ways.
Exactly. What was the dumbest question that Kyle Long got asked today regarding his brother?
Oh. So that was more the talk yesterday.
Yeah. And he seemed now just from hearing the audio that you sent in yesterday, he seemed aggravated by that question. Would that be a fair assessment?
Maybe. I think he just kind of was trying to downplay the whole thing. You know, we've been through this before. This is actually the third or fourth time they've played each other in the NFL. And a couple years ago, they went to the Bears practice in New England in the preseason. So they actually practiced against each other for three straight days. I think they're just a little bit tired of it.
Sure.
And by the way, it's Howie Long's birthday on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Is it? Wow. So who's going to give the best present? Who does Dad love more? It all plays in. This a whole big Shakespearean drama playing out.
Exactly.
Very nice. Well, Adam, we know you're up there busy. We will continue to follow your coverage throughout the week. Thank you very much. Happy New Year. Always a pleasure.
All right. Happy New Year, guys.
Take care. That's Adam Ahoge. He's covering the Bears. Andy, do you want to make a prediction this early in the week since we don't know if you're going to be here tomorrow?
Yeah, well, yeah. I would say that the Bears have this game.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm thinking it's going to be like a 24-13 kind of thing.
Wow. Very nice. The defense is coming.
Defense is going to come to play.
Yeah. They're not going to mess around. And you nodded your head when Adam mentioned, will Nick Foles take a hit?
Mm-hmm.
Got to figure these guys are, not that you're trying to permanently take somebody out, but if his ribs are sensitive, that's the clean place to tackle somebody.
Yeah. This is not the NHL where they say upper body, lower body. No, they specifically target the areas. Yeah.
Yeah, we know where to hit it. All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But first, we got to find out what Kim has at 5 o'clock.
And as the new Congress convenes, President Trump pitches plans for his border wall.
All right, thanks again to Adam Hogue, Andy Mazur for a little Bears talk. Next hour, we are going to give you a chance to sit in the WGN Radio's glass seats at the United Center when the Blackhawks take on the Calgary Flames Monday, January 7th. If you haven't seen a game sitting on the glass, you have not really seen a hockey game. It is unbelievable. The speed, the size, the impact, everything is different. Plus, it's just cool to turn around and wave at all those other suckers who are sitting way up top. We'll give you a chance to go see the Blackhawks on the glass in the next hour. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. It's Brian Noonan in for Rokan and Anna DeVlantes. They will be back with you on Monday afternoon after enjoying their nice holiday break. Sometime this hour, I am going to give you a chance to sit in the WGN seats on the glass. That's right. You'll get to sit in our glass seats. They're not made of glass, but they're on the glass. Chicago Blackhawks taking on the Calgary Flames Monday, January 7th. You can be there sometime this hour. Oh, very, very exciting. Right now, though, it is time for...
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go!
Now, it's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
I really, every time I play that, I'm like, why are you yelling at me? Stop screaming. I know I have to get on with it. We'll get on with it in just a moment. There's no need to be so forceful. I am very excited about the Top 5 at 5 because it's going to see if my glasses can actually magnify small print. Let's get started and find out.
Number 5.
Nancy Pelosi sat with NBC's Savannah Guthrie and provided a wide-ranging interview that aired this morning on the Today Show. Ongoing negotiations with President Trump over a border wall funding and the government shutdown came up for discussion, but it was the speaker's take on indicting a sitting president that will likely get the most play.
Do you believe the special counsel should honor and observe the Department of Justice guidance that states a sitting president cannot be indicted?
I do not think that that is conclusive. No, I do not.
So you think it's possible that Special Counsel Mueller could legally indict a sitting president?
Let's just see what Mueller does. Let's spend our time on getting results for the American people.
Yeah, let's focus about getting this shutdown over with. How about that first, and then we'll move on to some other things. There is a bonus cut from Nancy Pelosi.
As you well know, there is longstanding Department of Justice guidance that states a sitting president should not be indicted. But it is not the law.
No, it is not the law. Everything indicates that a president can be indicted after he is no longer president of the United States.
What about a sitting president?
Well, sitting president when he's no longer president of the United States.
A president who is in office. Right. Could Robert Mueller come back and say, I am seeking an indictment?
I think that that is an open discussion. I think that is an open discussion in terms of the law.
Does Nancy Pelosi understand the definition of sitting president? That means he's in office. It's when he's not in office, he is no longer a sitting president. He is a former president. That's kind of a big distinction there. But, you know, sometimes words are tough. And labels are hard. We, you know, why do we have to label everything?
Avoiding questions is hard too.
Everything is. Facts are hard. Everything's hard when you're blinded by rage, as a lot of people are in this country now. And it's. I read a piece today. You know, Nancy Pelosi having a hard time discerning between her respect for the office and her. This was the wording on the headline, and her disdain for its occupant. I was like, oh boy, this needs. Oh, we're going to have a lot of cooperation. Everything's going to be lovely.
Number four.
In what was a last-minute surprise to the White House press corps, President Trump made a cameo in the briefing room. So this afternoon, he was surrounded by a number of Border Patrol and ICE agents. The president went on to make another pitch for a southern border wall, claiming, with only anecdotal evidence, that the public is behind him.
I have never had so much support as I have in the last week. Over my stance for border security, for border control, and for, frankly, the wall or the barrier. I have never had anything like it in terms of calls coming in terms of people writing in and tweeting and doing whatever they have to do. I've never had this much support, and we've done some things that, as you know, have been very popular.
This is, again, just anecdotal evidence because, listen, whether you're a huge President Trump supporter or not, you have to admit he hasn't really always been strictly adhering to the facts, to put it diplomatically. Some would say he tells a lot of falsehoods. A big story came out from the Washington Post talking about how many falsehoods the president has spouted over the last year. It's not surprising that maybe, you know, he thinks he's gotten a lot of these letters and tweets and things like that, but perhaps he's just exaggerating a wee bit.
If he said it, it must be true.
Well, some people would say that. I would not be one of those people, but there are people. Do we have a bonus cut on this one as well, Brian?
Having a drone fly overhead, and I think nobody knows much more about technology, this type of technology, certainly, than I do. Having drones and various other form of sensors, they're all fine, but they're not going to stop the problems that this country has.
When did the president become the foremost authority on drone technology? That's again, it seems like a wild boast. It would be like me saying, I am the utmost authority on cooking venison. I've eaten it once. You know, I know what venison is, but I am by far not the foremost authority on cooking venison. I'm sure the president knows exactly what a drone is and what they're capable of, you know, like taking a picture of an inauguration crowd. But I don't believe that he now is the be-all and end-all when it comes to drone technology. But technology. But that's it. All right, we will continue the top five at five because I am the foremost authority on the top five news stories of the day until Roe comes back on Monday. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Let's find out what Kim has in store for us at 5:30.
Brian, the stock market off to its worst start of the year in two decades.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago. That's at 10:30 on WGN-TV. All right, it is time to continue. We must move on as we continue the top five at five. And if I, are we on, this is the one we
want. Number three,
this is exciting. Lifetime, oh, they have good movies. They will air their highly anticipated Surviving R. Kelly documentary tonight. It will feature testimonies from a group of women that allegedly encountered mental, physical, and sexual abuse at the hands of R. Kelly throughout his music career. According to a legal letter obtained by TMZ, Kelly's legal team is reportedly threatening to sue Lifetime if they don't pull the plug on the three-night series. The 51-year-old's lawyer, Brian Nix, alleges that the documentary is filled with false allegations, as he believes the subjects are defaming Kelly for personal gain. Kelly also says he has, quote, audio recordings that show Lifetime knew some of the girls are lying, but that the budget was too high to turn back now, end quote.
There's a difference between R. Kelly and Robert. R. Kelly is this fun, laughing, loving guy. But Robert is the devil.
should have never introduced her to him. I should have never introduced my family to him.
He ain't a monster by himself. It took some help. Black women don't get the same recognition as our white counterparts.
A grown man, 50-something years old. That's not acceptable. Nowhere. Nowhere.
Now, I didn't even know this thing was going to air till I read the story earlier today. Now I have to watch this.
That is intense.
Yeah, because I, you know, he's not a monster by himself. Who helped make him a monster? All of these things. It is. Brian, are you going to be tuned in as an R. Kelly? Yeah, Brian loves R. Kelly. He loves not his activities, allegedly.
The music is good.
Yeah, you can separate the man. The man's music from the man's alleged activities. I don't know, but I'm going to be watching for 3 nights to try to find out.
Well, it's interesting because there's so much talk around it, and yes. You never really knew much of the storyline right. Other than the quote-unquote rumors.
Yeah,
so.
There's a lot of little rumors, some innuendos, very shadowy things being dropped.
It'll be interesting
now to
see it all laid out and make your opinion on what happened.
And listen, Lifetime's a big enough network. They're not going to air things they know are patently false. They have too much to lose. It's not like, oh, whatever. We'll just put on whatever somebody said. Sure, I'm sure it's fine. You know, I'm not saying it's 100% fact, but I'm sure they've done their due diligence. And of course, if I'm R. Kelly and his people, I'm going to go. You got whatever you got to do to get this thing, thing pulled.
Just block
please.
It.
I don't care what it takes. Please, please don't let them air this. He's not the devil by himself.
Number two.
Brian came running down the halls. He was so excited by this story. Queen guitarist Brian May has released his first single in more than 2 decades, and it celebrates an achievement of NASA's that was also many years in the making. The song New Horizons is about NASA's successful flyby of a mysterious mountain-sized object that's farther from the Earth than anything else humanity has visited. Now, I like when it got in that guitar riff. At the beginning, I was ready to write it off completely.
It still sounds like Queen.
Yeah, it does.
You could tell, even without Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, it's got that same instrumental sound, the same tone.
That vibe.
Yeah, first single in 2 decades. Very nice. Well, good. And, you know, it's nice to be inspired by things in space. I don't know if you know this. We're going to talk to one of the chief astronomers from Adler about the far side of the moon that China allegedly. This is what's so funny. We're going to talk about there's some footage and people are like, no, fake news. It's a fraud. China didn't land a probe there. It's all lies. There was a shadow. Yeah, it's the moon. It's the not as light side of the moon as others.
The other side.
The other side of the moon. But sure, there's shadows. There's shadows here. You're saying the city is fake because I took a picture of it and there were shadows? No one can prove it. Nobody can prove the China line. Nobody proves it. Really? Nobody can prove it? I'm sure somebody can prove it. All right, this next one as we move on to...
Number one.
Do that to me one more time. Once is never enough.
Hello.
With a like you.
Pardon me while I bring down the lights.
Do that to me one more time. I can never get enough of a man like you.
Andy, what do you think she's singing about right there?
The captain.
Sure, all right, the captain.
Or Muskrat Susie or Muskrat Sam.
They're wiggling on whatever.
They do the jitterbug in Muskrat Land.
And the tree that... Daryl Dragon, the musician best known as the Captain from the duo Captain and Tennille, has died. A classically trained pianist, Dragon played keyboard for the Beach Boys from 1967 to 1972. He was given the nickname Captain by lead singer Mike Love because Dragon loved to wear captain's hats on stage. In 1971, Dragon met his future wife, Toni Tennille. when she hired him to play piano for a musical called Mother Earth. While on tour, Dragon and Tennille soon began a romantic and musical relationship, performing in smaller venues together when not on tour with the Beach Boys. Going by the stage name The Captain and Tennille, the duo quickly formed a following on the strength of the song The Way I Want to Touch You. Oh, they're very dirty, The Captain and Tennille. Who would have thought? You know, Do It to Me One More Time, The Way I Want to Touch You. The team scored a record deal with A&M Records in 1974.
I never wanted to touch a man the way that I want to touch you.
This is when your mom and dad would open the clay bottle of Lancers and send you to bed early.
I never wanted to love.
Now, isn't it the truth that Love Will Keep Us Together, the big hit, you know, there's a secret message in the end of it.
Oh.
About Neil Sedaka.
Really?
It does say Sedaka is back.
Hang on. Well, we've got that coming up. That is our next clip. Because,
sorry about that. Didn't mean
no, that's
to jump
okay. Because the song Love Will Keep Us Together climbed to number one in November of 1974, where it remained for 8 weeks. It won the Grammy for Record of the Year the following year. I love when the sweet talking girls come walking by. Can you get to the end of that song and see if Andy's
It's toward the very end. When they're singing and when they're trailing out toward the end.
Apparently,
Neil Sedaka produced it, right? So I think that it was kind of like a return to prominence for Neil Sedaka.
He got his number one song back. Derek Dragon was 76, by the way. I had never heard this.
Yeah.
And this that song, you could not escape that song.
No,
couldn't escape that one. Muskrat Love, and it does. Like I hadn't listened to Captain and Tennille in decades, and now the four songs we play, it's like, wait a minute,
they ring true, don't they?
They ring true, and these two were a little they were randy in their musical selections or in their
well, they were a nice
songs.
Married couple.
Sure, they were. All right, Brian has it. Let's see if we hear the hidden message.
Thank you very much, brother. Very nice.
Look at Andy Mazur.
Back, baby.
Winning obscure music trivia for $1,000.
There you go.
Andy Mazur. Very nice. Well, then, we should, on that, we just have to say...
The Top 5 at 5.
The Top 5 at 5 is over. All right, it's 5:30. On the other side, we will talk about the far side of the moon. Yes, with our friends from the Adler Planetarium. It is time for the news. Here's Kim Gordon. That's the Brian May single that we were talking about before that he wrote about New Horizons. Now, somebody sent me a text. Brian May has a PhD in astrophysics and has been an active participant in the New Horizons mission. So that would inspire him to write that song. Speaking of New Horizons, speaking of the Chinese robotic lander going to the far side of the moon, a lot of big space news. And one man who knows all about that is Andrew Johnston. He is the VP of Astronomy and Collections at the Adler Planetarium, and he joins me now. Andrew, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Like you said, this is one of the weeks that we live for here at the Adler Planetarium. It's exciting news.
Yeah, this is a big deal. Now, for those who are a little foggy, since we were talking about New Horizons, and New Horizons just had a very impressive rendezvous with something, but give a quick background on the New Horizons mission.
Yeah, sure. New Horizons was a spacecraft that was designed to explore Pluto and the rest of what we call the Kuiper Belt, this zone of icy bodies out beyond the orbit of Neptune. And on its way, it flew by Jupiter to get a gravitational boost. Then it returned amazing images of Pluto several years ago. And just this past week, it flew by this tiny object out there in the Kuiper Belt.
And how long does it take a signal to get from, because we know New Horizons is moving faster than probes that have been sent out before. But how long does it take for you to get a signal back?
So it takes hours, but that's not caused by the speed of the spacecraft. It is moving really fast. But it takes 6 hours for that signal to get all the way back to the Earth. But just because it's so distant, you know, we can't change the speed of light. That's that speed right. limit we're stuck with. So that's why when the spacecraft flew by, there was a celebration. But at that time, we didn't know any pictures yet. And then they're slowly coming back over these last couple days.
And what is the object that it went by? What it, you named it, or it was named Ultima Thule.
Yeah.
What was it? What did you see in these pictures?
So what this is, Ultima Thule, is actually a two objects that have sort of nestled in and are touching each other. These are icy bodies. The whole thing is only about 20 miles wide. It's a little tiny world, as I said, much distant, more distant than Neptune or Pluto. And it's a surface composed of ice and also dust. It's got reddish-colored dust on it. And some of these pictures are just incredible. As I said, it's actually got two little worlds that are touching each other and slowly rotating around.
Very cool. Now, how long does the New Horizons mission, how long are you expecting it to last? Where do you guys theorize that this will go?
So New Horizons is going to keep working for quite some time, which is a good thing, because for the next couple of weeks, New Horizons is going to be out of touch with the Earth, because the sun, that pesky sun, is going to be in the way. But after that couple of weeks, the spacecraft will continue radioing back all the information that collected. We only have a few blurry pictures. Okay. We're going to get a lot more later, about a month from now. And then it will continue using its instruments to measure things like magnetic fields and charged particles out there in this very distant edge of the solar system for many years to come. It's got a radioactive power supply that should keep it going for a long time.
And one of the things that makes this so unique is the amount of power that it uses, because it uses a lot less than previous probes and things.
Yeah, so the New Horizons is one of only five spacecraft that have been launched, and they've been pushed by rockets so fast, they're leaving the solar system and never coming back. They're going out there into the galaxy. The other four were launched in the 1970s, and all of these spacecraft have these power supplies that generate just enough electricity. Some of the earlier ones actually is about the same power that you would use for a light bulb. But just from that little power, these clever engineers at places like the Applied Physics Lab that built New Horizons designed it in a way that it could do all these amazing science with really simple tools.
So let's be honest. How do astronomers and you folks at the Adler and everybody, when these pictures started coming back from New Horizons and its rendezvous with Ultima Thule, how do you celebrate this?
So let me paint a picture for you. So when the picture is first coming down, what happens with the astronomers here at the Adler is we tend to gather around whiteboards and we start arguing about what things look like in the picture. That's exactly what was going on. All the pictures you have in your head of, well, minus the lab coats. We don't wear lab coats, but we do have a whiteboard, and we were actually looking at the different images. We're trying to interpret different things on the images. Right now they're kind of blurry pictures. For something to be visible in these images, it needs to be about the size of three football fields, to give you an idea.
Okay.
So we're still trying to interpret, why is this part of it bright, this part of it dark? We've got a lot more work to do to figure it out.
Well, you have time, which is always good. All right, the other big space-related news that came out this week, it has been reported that the Chinese probe has landed on the far side of the moon. Now, I was chastised earlier because, being a Pink Floyd fan, I mistakenly said
dark side
of the moon, which I'm seeing in a lot of reports. But one of my coworkers is a space snob and was all over me that I used the wrong terminology. But this is a big deal, right?
It is absolutely a big deal. Now, many robotic spacecraft have landed on the moon all the way back to the 1960s and so forth, especially leading up to the time of the Apollo moon landings. As you know, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of those landings this year. What's interesting, there's actually two interesting things about this mission, is that they actually managed to land the spacecraft on the far side of the moon, the side of the moon that faces away from the Earth. They did it by also launching a small communications satellite. It works as a radio relay, because otherwise we'd never be able to hear from it.
Right.
And the other interesting thing about it is that it's China has done this. This is the second landing that they've achieved on the moon, and it just goes to show that there are more nations are getting involved in launching missions out into space and doing things like exploring the moon.
Yeah, it's I remember when Apollo was happening. It was a very exciting time when we were doing missions to the moon and things. And I'm hoping that NASA gets back into, going to the moon. I know we've been to the moon before, but we could go back. Because China now is trying to catch the U.S. and Russia, and there's talks that they want to launch their own manned space station in the next few years.
Yeah, so they've had a space station up there, and they're developing another one. I don't know if this will turn out to be a race or not. You know, what was happening back 50 years ago, that was a race, right? You had superpowers both trying to send humans to the moon. Whereas in this case, we got different nations launching and doing different things, sometimes in a spirit of cooperation, sometimes not. But nations like India and China and Japan are launching these missions to places like planets and the moon.
So you've seen the images that came back from the far side of the moon. What was different from what you already knew about the surface of the moon, and what was kind of similar?
So all we've seen so far are some images from the surface, and it looks pretty smooth. There's a great sequence that shows the lander actually approaching the surface, so there are not big chunks of rock. They looks like they picked a place that's relatively smooth, probably intentionally. Nothing hugely surprising, actually. What I'm actually waiting for is when this spacecraft that landed on the far side is going to have a rover that's going to trundle out and drive over the surface. Now, the first rover that China sent didn't work for very long, but this one we'll see. But that one, rovers are exciting because you can drive up to particular things of interest and get a really close view. Now, they've got sunlight. You were just joking about far side versus, dark side.
Dark side, right.
They got plenty of sunlight, but of course, eventually it's going to the sun will set on that part of the moon. I should say that when you were saying about dark side,
yes,
in just 2 weeks, the entire moon, both sides, will be dark side.
Ah,
there's actually a lunar eclipse coming up in couple weeks. It's on the night of January 20th, and the whole moon will be getting dark late at night. If you want to get a look at it, come down to the Adler. We'll have telescopes out. That weekend, on the 19th, we'll actually be starting our new dome show called Imagine the Moon. So we're celebrating the moon at Luna Palooza here at the Adler. Come on down that weekend.
Yeah, it sounds. I love when we have a lunar eclipse. I was down for the solar eclipse too, and I know Adler were very, very involved in that. So they can go to adlerplanetarium.org. You can get all the information you need about Imagine the Moon ahead of the total lunar eclipse. Now, what else? I'm sure there's going to be some big celebrations for the 50th anniversary of the Apollo mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're all of us in this space museum business are celebrating this, and it is an exciting time. Coming this summer, we'll be also celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Apollo landing. So stay tuned for details on that. But we've got a lot of opportunities to show off things we have on display here in our museum related to some of the Apollo missions. So we're looking forward to welcoming people down for that.
Well, the Adler is a wonderful facility here in Chicago. People need to avail themselves of it a lot more. Great space news this week, Andrew Johnston. I appreciate you taking some time. We will talk to you again very soon.
Take care.
Take it easy. That's Andrew Johnston. He is the VP of Astronomy and Collections at the Adler Planetarium. You can go to adlerplanetarium.org. All right, friends. It's time. I've been talking about this all day, but I have a pair of tickets. The WGN seats on the glass.
Ooh.
This is a big time, Violetta. We're not playing games here. It's a big, big deal. We are going to give you a chance to sit down where the hoi polloi sit. Oh, down with the swells. It is a very, very exciting. And I'm trying to find, I think I threw, oh no, here it is. I thought I threw my question out. I did not.
Oh, you got to make them work for it.
You know me, Violetta. I don't give people you don't just get these kind of tickets. These are a big deal. You have to be able, first of all, if you're not able to go to the game Monday, January 7th, which is this coming Monday, don't bother calling in. If you can go to the game and you think you are smart, then by all means, are we taking the first caller, Jeff? How are we doing? We just going to line these up? Just going to line them up and see. All right, 312-981-7200. Here's the question. You a Hawks fan? Then you'll know this quick. In June of 1990, the Blackhawks acquired star defenseman Chris Chelios from the Montreal Canadiens. Who did they give up in return?
Oh.
In June 1990, the Blackhawks acquired star defenseman Chris Chelios from the Montreal Canadiens. Who did they give up in return? If you can answer this question, I'm putting you on the glass Monday at the United Center. Hawks, Calgary Flames. WGN, what are the traffic trouble spots, Violetta?